August 1898, Dover, Delaware. The heat of the day has broken, and the air smells of cut grass and warm earth. On the porch of the Pennington family home, Mary Elizabeth Dunning opens a package from the afternoon mail. A box of chocolate bonbons, a cambric handkerchief, and a note. With love to yourself and baby, Miss C. She passes the candy around. Her sister Ida takes one. Her daughter takes one. Friends gathered on the porch reach in. The evening is warm. The chocolate is sweet. Within hours, everyone who ate the candy is violently ill. Cold sweat, swollen faces. Within days, two of them are dead. The package had traveled 3,000 miles from San Francisco, carrying arsenic laced throughout the chocolate. Someone had weaponized the United States mail, and the woman who did it had never set foot in Delaware. Welcome back, friend, to Hometown History, the podcast that takes a stroll down the main streets and back alleys of the past to uncover how local stories shaped the world. I'm Shane Waters, and today we're exploring how a box of poisoned chocolates mailed from San Francisco to a congressman's daughter in Dover, Delaware, became one of America's first murders by mail and changed the law forever. Dover, Delaware, in the 1890s, was a town older than the county itself. Delaware's capital sat centered on the Dover Green, the same public square where 30 men had ratified the United States Constitution back in 1787, making Delaware the first state in the Union. It was a place where history lived in the brickwork. The streets were lined with federal-style homes, and the courthouse stood just steps from where Caesar Rodney had once ridden to cast his famous vote for independence. Among the most prominent families in town was that of John Brown Pennington, a former United States congressman who had served in the 50th and 51st Congresses from 1887 to 1891. And a former Attorney General of Delaware. Pennington was one of the most respected men in Kent County. He had practiced law in Dover for decades, and his home near the Green reflected the standing of a man who had shaped Delaware's legal and political life for a generation. His daughter, Mary Elizabeth Pennington, was born January 14, 1863, and raised in Dover. Sources describe her as beautiful, devout, and kind-hearted. On February 12, 1891, she married John Preston Dunning, an ambitious newspaper reporter. On paper, it looked like a good match. It was not. The couple moved to San Francisco for Dunning's position as an Associated Press correspondent, where he covered assignments in Samoa and Chile. But John Dunning had a talent for self-destruction. He drank, he gambled, he carried on at least three extramarital affairs. He embezzled roughly $4,000 from the Associated Press to cover his gambling losses, and the AP fired him. It was quite a fall for a man who had once been trusted to report from foreign battlefields. 3,000 miles away, in a city Dunning had made into a personal wreck, lived a woman named Cordelia Botkin. Born in 1854 in Polk County, Missouri, she had married Welcome Botkin in 1872 in Kansas City. By the 1890s, she was estranged from her husband and living alone at 927 Gary Street in San Francisco. According to accounts, she was vain, posing for over 100 photographs of herself. She spent her days drifting through the city's hotel lobbies and saloons, a woman with time and no purpose. Around 1895, Dunning met Cordelia near Golden Gate Park. Their affair began almost immediately. She was roughly 41 years old, though she told him she was 29. He was about 32. For the next 3 years, the two carried on openly in San Francisco, attending the theater, dining in public, and drawing attention from friends and acquaintances who would later testify against her. In 1896, Mary, devastated by the infidelity and financial ruin, packed up and returned to Dover with their young daughter to live with her father. And then something strange started happening. Anonymous letters began arriving at the Pennington home, postmarked San Francisco, detailing Dunning's affairs, signed only a friend. John Brown Pennington intercepted most of them. He saved every one. That decision would prove critical. Early 1898, the Spanish-American War was coming, and the Associated Press needed war correspondents. Despite everything, the AP rehired Dunning on March 8, 1898. He departed San Francisco for Puerto Rico. Before he left, he told Cordelia Botkin the affair was over. He was going back to his wife. According to trial testimony, Cordelia pleaded with him to remain with her and wept bitterly when they parted. But grief turned into something else, something cold and patient. Here's where it gets interesting. What the records show is a woman who did not act on impulse. Cordelia Botkin planned a murder the way a clerk files paperwork, one step at a time, over the course of weeks. On July 27, 1898, she visited an acquaintance named Almora Ruoff in Stockton, California, asking about the effects of poisons on the human body and whether a person had to sign a name when sending a registered package. These were not idle questions. She walked into the Owl Drugstore at 1002 Market Street and purchased 2 ounces of arsenic. The clerk, Frank Gray, later testified she said she needed it to bleach a straw hat. He offered alternatives. She refused. On July 31st, she visited George Haas and Sons Confectionery in the Phelan Building, 810 Market Street, and bought a fancy, unmarked box of bonbons. She asked the clerks to leave room in the box because she had another article to add. She bought a cambric handkerchief at the City of Paris department store on Union Square and forgot to remove the tag. She wrote a note, "With love to yourself and baby, Miss C." Then she mixed the arsenic into the chocolates, the grains so large they were later described as the size of coffee grounds. On August 4, 1898, Cordelia Botkin mailed the package from the Ferry Post Office in San Francisco. Postal clerk John Dunnigan later recalled noticing the address, Miss John Dunning, Dover, Delaware. The package traveled 3,000 miles by rail from California to the front porch of a congressman's family. August 9, 1898, the package arrived at the Pennington home. Harry Pennington's grandson picked it up from the post office. That evening, after dinner, Mary opened the box on the porch. The note signed Miss C made her think of Miss Corbelly, a California friend. She offered the candy to those around her. Several family members and friends shared the chocolates, including her sister, Ida Dean. Mary's young daughter and friends Josephine Bateman and Ethel Millington bit into one of the chocolates, detected a crystal substance, and spat it out. She escaped the worst. The others were not so fortunate. Within hours, everyone who had eaten the candy fell ill, sweating, swollen, retching. Doctors were summoned. At first, they suspected the corn fritters from dinner. But Mary Elizabeth Dunning and Ida Harriet Dean, who had eaten more candy than anyone else, only grew worse. Within days of eating the candy, both Mary Elizabeth Dunning and her sister Ida Harriet Dean were dead. Arsenic.
I used to just go with whatever meat looked good or was on sale at the grocery store. But now that I've experienced the exceptional quality, flavor, and convenience that you can get from Omaha Steaks, I'm never going back. They can build a custom food plan based on your schedule, which means less food waste and stocking up on high-quality proteins to always have on hand. With Omaha Steaks in your freezer, you're always just minutes away from a quality dinner, whether it's Taco Tuesday or a weekend feast. Taste the Omaha Steaks difference and never settle for grocery proteins again. Get flavorful, high-quality proteins delivered by visiting omahasteaks.com, plus $35 off when you use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, code YUM. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code YUM at checkout for $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply.
When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
Discover what BetterHelp Online Therapy can do for you. Visit BetterHelp.com today.
Poisoning. Mary was 35 years old. Ida was 44. Four other people who ate less candy survived, including Mary's young daughter and Harry Pennington, who had eaten only one piece. John Brown Pennington was 72 years old, and he had just lost two daughters. But the old congressman was not finished. He sent the remaining chocolates to Theodore R. Wharf, Delaware's state chemist at the University of Delaware, who confirmed massive quantities of arsenic. The autopsies concluded both women had ingested enough arsenic to have killed a horse. And then Pennington did something that cracked the case wide open. He pulled out the anonymous letters he had been receiving for months, the ones postmarked San Francisco, and laid them next to the note from the candy box. The handwriting matched. Detective Menard J. McVeigh was dispatched from Delaware to San Francisco, carrying the candy box, the cambric handkerchief, the note, and the anonymous letters as evidence. It was a journey of nearly a week by rail. San Francisco Police Chief Isaiah W. Lees took personal charge of the investigation. Lees was one of the most tenacious detectives on the West Coast, and the murder of a congressman's daughter demanded nothing less. Dunning was recalled from Puerto Rico. He looked at the handwriting on the note, and he said one word, just one, Cordelia. What followed was quite methodical. Lees traced the candy to George Haas and Sons, where clerks identified Cordelia Botkin as the buyer. He traced the handkerchief to the City of Paris store, where staff confirmed the purchase. The forgotten price tag sealed it. He traced the arsenic to the Owl drugstore, where clerk Frank Gray identified Botkin. Every step of her planning had left a witness. Daniel T. Ames, one of the country's most respected questioned document examiners, analyzed Botkin's known writing against the note, the package address, and the anonymous letters. His conclusion? Cordelia Botkin, to the exclusion of all others, had written the questioned material. Two additional examiners, Carl Eisenschimmer and Theodore Kitka, independently confirmed it. Botkin was arrested in Stockton, California, without resistance. The first cross-jurisdictional murder prosecution in American history was about to begin. The trial began December 9, 1898, in San Francisco, before Judge Carroll Cook. Delaware spent $3,000 transporting witnesses across the country, and the press turned it into a spectacle. The case posed a question no American court had faced before. Could a person be tried in one state for a crime committed by mail from another? William Randolph Hearst's San Francisco Examiner assigned reporter Lizzie Livernash to cover the case. Livernash ingratiated herself with Botkin and filed front page exclusives. The Examiner erected a public bulletin board outside the courthouse to post updates for the crowds. On closing argument day, more than 500 people were turned away. It was quite the circus. Yellow journalism at full volume. The prosecution built its case on the handwriting analysis, the drugstore purchase, the candy store identification, and the forgotten handkerchief price tag. Dunning took the stand and was jailed for contempt when he refused to name his other lovers, claiming he was too much of a gentleman. He was released when the defense dropped the question. On December 30, 1898, after 4 hours of deliberation, the jury found Cordelia Botkin guilty on both counts of first-degree murder. They chose life over death. She was formally sentenced to life imprisonment on February 4, 1899. In the county jail, Botkin received extraordinary privileges. According to accounts, she exchanged favors with guards for freedom to leave the grounds. In May 1900, Judge Cook himself spotted Botkin riding a San Francisco street cart in elegant clothing. Her conviction was overturned on appeal for improper jury instruction. In 1904, she was retried, convicted again, and resentenced to life. After the 1906 earthquake destroyed the county jail, Cordelia was transferred to San Quentin. She applied for parole in February 1910. Denied. What the records tell us is that this case consumed everyone it touched. John Preston Dunning, his career destroyed by the trial revelations, died in 1907 in Philadelphia, penniless and at 43. Welcome Botkin divorced Cordelia on March 9, 1899, and died in 1904 in Stockton. Their son, Beverly Brown Botkin, died April 30, 1905, in Byron, California. Cordelia was allowed to view his remains under guard escort. John Brown Pennington lived long enough to see the first conviction. He died June 1, 1902, at 76. Daniel T. Ames went on to publish Ames on Forgery in 1900, one of the first authoritative American works on questioned document examination. The Botkin case helped launch forensic handwriting analysis as a recognized courtroom discipline. Cordelia Botkin died March 7, 1910, at San Quentin, age 55 or 56. The official cause of death, softening of the brain due to melancholia. She was buried in an unmarked grave at Oak Mound Cemetery in Healdsburg, California. She outlived her victim's husband, her own husband, and her only son. She died alone and broken. The Dover Green still stands at the heart of Delaware's capital, just as it has since William Penn laid it out in 1683. The old state house, built in 1791, still opens its doors to visitors. And at the old Presbyterian Cemetery on South Governors Avenue, the graves of Mary Elizabeth Dunning and Ida Harriet Dean can still be visited at 316 South Governors Avenue. The Pennington family home, now known as the Patton House, houses the Delaware State Housing Authority offices. Dover has hosted walking tours of the Pennington Mansion grounds and Mary's gravestone over the years. At one event, the organizers sold boxes of candy with assurances that none were poisoned. Historians believe the Botkin case was among the first murder-by-mail prosecutions in American history, and it was the case that proved the mail could be a murder weapon. It was also the first cross-jurisdictional prosecution of its kind, a person tried for a crime committed in a state she had never set foot in. The legal questions it raised about interstate criminal jurisdiction still echo in courtrooms today. Every time a dangerous package enters the mail system, from the Unabomber to the 2001 anthrax letters, the question Cordelia Botkin first posed in 1898 resurfaces. How do you stop someone from weaponizing the mail? Daniel T. Ames's forensic handwriting testimony helped establish question document examination as a recognized courtroom discipline. The case that began with a box of candy on a Delaware porch ended up shaping how America investigates crimes that cross state lines. That's the story of a box of poisoned chocolates that traveled 3,000 miles to kill a congressman's daughter on her own front porch, and the jealous woman who proved the mail could be a murder weapon. If you found this story as chilling as I did, share it with someone who thinks they know how dangerous a package can be. I'm Shane Waters. Every hometown has a story. Tonight, it's a box of candy on a porch in Dover, Delaware, in the 3,000-mile trail of arsenic that changed American law. Good night, friend.
Some days you just want to amplify your everyday look. Like when you want the look of false lashes without the extra effort. Reach for Thrive Cosmetics Liquid Lash Volumizer Mascara. Or when you want all eyes on your smile, keep Empower Gloss Ultra Glossy Lip Serum in your bag. It's a burst of 24-hour hydration that smooths like a serum, shines like a gloss, and can be worn sheer or layered. You'll always look and feel your best with Thrive Cosmetics. Plus, every product is 100% vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients that work with your skin, not against it. Amplify your everyday. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/shine26 for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/shine26.